ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 14, Text 1. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Atata Ashriyatam Rajan. Vamsha somasya pavana yasmin ailadayo bhupa kirtyante punya kirtaya. Translation: Srila Shukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, O King, thus far you have heard the description of the dynasty of the sun god. Now hear the most glorious and purifying description of the dynasty of the moon god. This description mentions kings like Ayla, Purudava, of whom it is glorious to hear. No commentary. But this is the beginning of a chapter, so I'm going to read first the chapter summary, and then we'll continue. The summary of this 14th chapter is given as follows. This chapter describes Soma and how he kidnapped the wife of Brihaspati and begot in her womb a son named Buddha. Buddha begot Pururava, who begot six sons headed by Ayu in the womb of Urvashi. Lord Brahma was born from the lotus that sprouted from the navel of Garbhodakshai Vishnu. Brahma had a son named Atri, and Atri's son was Soma, the king of all drugs and stars. Soma became the conqueror of the entire universe, and being inflated with pride, he kidnapped Tara, who was the wife of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. A great fight ensued between the demigods and the asuras, but Brahma rescued Brihaspati's wife from the clutches of Soma and returned her to her husband, thus stopping the fighting. In the womb of Tara, Soma begot a son named Buddha, who later begot in the womb of Ila a son named Ayla, or Pururava. Urvashi was captivated by Pururava's beauty, and therefore she lived with him for some time, but when she left his company, he became almost like a madman. While traveling all over the world, he met Urvashi again at Kurukshetra, but she agreed to join with him for only one night in a year. 1 year later, Pururava saw Urvashi at Kurukshetra and was glad to be with her for one night, but when he thought of her leaving him again, he was overwhelmed by grief. Urvashi then advised Pururava to worship the Gandharvas. Being satisfied with Pururava, the Gandharvas gave him a woman known as Agnistali. Pururava mistook Agnistali for Urvashi, but while he was wandering in the forest, his misunderstanding was cleared, and he immediately gave up her company. After returning home and meditating upon Urvashi all night, he wanted to perform a Vedic ritualistic ceremony to satisfy his desire. Thereafter, he went to the same place where he had left Agnistali, and there he saw that from the womb of a Sami tree had come an Ashvata tree. Pururava made two sticks from this tree and thus produced a fire. By such a fire, one can satisfy all lusty desires. The fire was considered the son of Pururava. In such a yuga, there was only one social division called Hamsa. There were no divisions of Varna like Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. The Veda was the Omkara. The various demigods were not worshipped, for only the Supreme Personality of Godhead was the worshipable deity. Then we just did text one. Text 2. Sahasra shirasa pungso nabi hrada sororo hat jatasya sit sito datur atri pitri samogunai. Translation: Lord Vishnu, Garbhodakshai Vishnu, is also known as Sahasra shirasa purusha. From the lake of his navel sprang a lotus on which Lord Brahma was generated, Atri, the son of Lord Brahma, was as qualified as his father. No commentary. Text 3. Tasya drigbhyo bhavat putra somo mittamaya kila viprao sadhyudu gananam brahma kalpita pati. Translation. From Atri's tears of jubilation was born a son named Soma, the moon, who was full of soothing rays. Lord Brahma appointed him the director of the Brahmins, drugs, and luminaries. Purport. According to the Vedic description, Soma, the moon god, was born from the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chandrama Manasojata. But here we find that Soma was born from the tears in the eyes of Atri. This appears contradictory to the Vedic information, but actually it is not, for this birth of the moon is understood to have taken place in another millennium. When tears appear in the eyes because of jubilation, the tears are soothing. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Drigbhya Anandashrubhya Atta Evamritamaya. Here the word drigbhya means from tears of jubilation. Therefore the moon god is called Amritamaya, full of soothing rays. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 4.1.15, we find this verse, Atre patnya nusaya trin jagye suyasaya sutan tatam durvasasam somam atmesha brahma sambhavan. This verse describes that Anasuya, the wife of Atri Rishi, bore three sons, Soma, Durvasa, and Dattatreya. It is said that at the time of conception, Anasuya was impregnated by the tears of Atri. Before I begin, let me say that I'm very happy to be here with the devotees of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir. I can't remember the last time I sat here and gave class. It's quite some time ago. I've not been traveling so much, traveling much less over the last few years. And as a matter of fact, usually I have to apologize when I land in a place where I'm supposed to give class just speaking continuously in English, because the last 2 years I've been in East Europe, except for just a short visit to America, so I'm quite accustomed to speaking in fragments. It's very difficult when I land in a place where I speak in straight English. My mind is used to stopping in between every fragment and thinking, but I'll adjust. But if you see me struggling, that's one of the reasons. My apology. This is my first class since from East Europe. Second? Oh, that's right. I did speak the other night. I forgot. Yeah. But I'm always happy to be here with all of you. I've always considered this temple to be like my home. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to spending some more time at home in the future. Now I'm able to travel a little bit more. And I just hope that you will accept me for what I am, which is not very much of a contributor in any way, but I come to take your association and to become purified, which is responsibility of every aspiring devotee. So I come here for that purpose. But for some reason, the tables are turned, and here I am sitting in front of all of you, speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam. So I apologize, and try to say something relevant. So, didn't expect to be speaking from this section of the Bhagavata about tears. But since the verse and the commentary is on this topic, we'll say something in this connection. It's explained here that Atri Muni, from his tears of jubilation, gave birth to Soma. Prabhupada quotes from the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, which describes how Atri Muni had performed austerities, standing on legs, one leg. He wanted to get a son who was as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada explains in the commentary that we can understand that because Atri Muni didn't want the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a son, that he wanted a son as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore he was not a pure devotee, Prabhupada said in that commentary. His desire was not pure. Had it been pure, he would have desired to have the son, the Supreme Lord as his son. Nonetheless, because of his austerities and because of his desire, the predominating deities of the universe, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, appeared before him. And they gave him the benediction that we are all coming ultimately from the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And therefore, you will receive a son that is as good as the Supreme Lord. And I think it is described that from Anasuya came Dattatreya, Soma, and Durvasa. And Soma was considered to be a partial expansion of Lord Brahma. And Prabhupada quotes the verse here that at that time, the method of conceiving, the method of conception, was done by the tears of Atri Muni. And here, in this verse, it's described that he had tears of jubilation. Very happy. Prabhupada, elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, quoted this reference recently in connection with something else, but I'm pretty sure it was in reference to Dhruva Maharaj. Yes, Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva returned from the forest and King Uttanapad received him after not seeing him for an extensive period of time, King Uttanapad took Dhruva on his lap, embraced him, rubbed his head, and tears came from his eyes. And Prabhupada said in the commentary that by nature's way, when a man cries, there are two causes. He says that first cause is when a man is experiencing happiness because of the fulfillment of a desire. Then his tears are cool. Very cool. And when a man is feeling distress, his tears are hot. So here we see that Atri Muni had tears of jubilation. And they were described as cool, and as we know, cool is soothing. Mm-hmm. Now, his jubilation, although it doesn't explain here why he was feeling these tears of jubilation at the time of conception, but nonetheless, we can understand that, as Prabhupada explained, when there is a fulfillment of some desire, one feels jubilation. And as we also heard, that Atri Muni was not pure devotee. He had also some other desires, mixed desires. So he was feeling some jubilation, some happiness that was coming, of course, as a result of having the fulfillment of his desires. The fulfillment of our desires, as we know, that all desires can ultimately be fulfilled by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And there are many examples given in the Bhagavatam. Dhruva Maharaj, one example. He had his desire fulfilled in a way that was even more than he expected. He wanted to have a kingdom greater than his than Lord Brahma's. And he got the fulfillment of his desire beyond expectation. Cause of great jubilation and happiness, certainly. But nonetheless, the desire was fulfilled by the Lord. And as we know, at Dhruva Maharaj, when he went to the forest to perform austerities, his determined desire, very determined desire, was having that kingdom. He had feelings of vengeance. He was very disturbed at the fact that his stepmother would not allow him to sit on the lap of his father. He thought he had equal opportunity to be able to sit on the lap of his father, but therefore, in his mood, he went to the forest and was told by his mother that you have to approach the Supreme Lord if you want the fulfillment of any desire. He performed austerities. The Lord appeared before him as a result of his austerities, and Dhruva Maharaj realized, I've come here for a piece of broken glass, and instead I found the most valuable jewel. His vision, his darshan of the Lord, was the fulfillment of all his desires beyond his expectation, and of the Lord, of course, being very much inclined to satisfy his devotee, he wanted to reciprocate and give something in return, which is the nature of the relationship between the Lord and the devotee. Although the devotee is fully satisfied, all his desires are fulfilled by seeing the Lord. At that such a time, upon experiencing the presence of the Lord and the reciprocation of the Lord, there's no desire left in the heart. And therefore the devotee prays simply, Let me have an opportunity to serve you, birth after birth after birth. Or the devotee may pray, please let me take birth simply in association of your devotees, birth after birth after birth. The devotee doesn't want the fulfillment of any other desire than the desire which gives him the opportunity to hear, to chant, to glorify, and to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if it's birth after birth after birth after birth, is irrelevant. Why? Because remembering the Lord, hearing about the Lord, glorifying the Lord is so satisfying that there's no room for any other desire. So satisfying to the heart that all other desires, as we know, Shinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana. When one hears with enthusiasm, with great eagerness, then all other desires that are there within the heart, they're removed by the Lord, who is the super soul within the heart of every living being. He removes all obstacles on the path of devotional service and therefore gives one full satisfaction. Complete. No other desire is there. What the devotee, therefore, but the Lord, which we know the Lord wants to give something in return. This is the nature of reciprocal relationship between the Lord and the devotee. And as we've oftentimes explained, as described in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, how the Lord becomes so much inclined when the devotee accepts the Lord within his heart, serves the Lord within his heart, remembers the Lord within his heart. The Lord wants to give something in return. But the devotee says, no, I don't. This is it. I'm satisfied. I've reached the goal, the culmination, the fulfillment of all desires. I don't want anything. Just let me serve you. Let me remember you. And as we know, there are many examples the Lord would sometimes even provoke. I want to give you something. I want to give you some. Please accept, as he told Kolavecha Shuddha. You know, I'll make you a king. I'll give you a kingdom. Why? Why would he offer such a thing? He was, you know, he was baiting him, so to speak. He wanted Kolavecha to reveal his true colors. Why? Because Kolavecha had been living in extreme poverty. And obviously somebody in poverty must want wealth. So he said, I'll make you a king. I'll give you a kingdom. Kolavecha said, no, I don't. Please, you simply let me be your servant. You be my master, birth after birth. That is all I ask. Let me remember you always. Satisfy. The Lord wants to give something, but the devotee always comes back in competition. No, I don't want. Prahlad Maharaj said the same thing. Oh, why are you offering me a benediction? Don't take, you know, I shouldn't take such risks. Remember, I was born in the family of demons. Why should I take such risks by asking for some benediction from you? Prahlad Maharaj also refused, didn't want, not interested. So, nonetheless, although the devotee is disinclined to accept any benedictions from the Lord, we even, just the other night, we were talking on the story of Sudam Vipra. When Sudam Vipra came to see his classmate, Lord Krishna, with a few grains of broken rice, at the prompting of his wife, go, take this rice and go ask him, why do you have to live in poverty? Your friend is Lord Krishna. He can give you anything. So under the pressure, he went, but he wasn't. The last thing on his mind was to ask Krishna for something. It's the last thing. In fact, it didn't even exist. If it's the last thing implies that it was there. It didn't even exist in his mind. And as we know, the Lord took the broken rice that Sudambipra had brought with him. And he very eagerly took the rice right from his hand and began eating it. And Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, who was fanning him when he went to take his some more, she stopped, said, "No, please, don't eat any more. If you take any more, then I don't think I'll have sufficient opulence to be able to repay Sudam. Stop here." So Sudam, he left and he didn't ask, as we know. But when he returned home, he saw this beautiful palace and he understood. And it was this one verse in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam which describes that the Lord considers that any benediction he can give, and the Lord can definitely give some big benedictions. He can give planets, universes, opulence. You know, we see so many examples in the Bhagavatam how the Lord gave planets to his devotees to reside upon. But Sudambipra was saying that the Lord considers that any benediction he can give to be completely insignificant in comparison to even the smallest offering made with affection by his devotee. And he said that because it is the nature of the Lord that whatever the devotee offers, although externally it may appear to be very insignificant, the Lord always magnifies it and makes it something very big. And this is Sudambipra describing the characteristics and qualities of the Lord. What may appear to be very insignificant, why did Rukmini stop Krishna from taking a second handful of rice? Because the value of those few grains of broken rice from the hands of Sudambipra, and for her to reciprocate, she didn't have sufficient opulences to give for a few grains. Imagine if it had been a second handful. She said, I would have exhausted all of my opulences. So the value system, of course, is based upon what brings pleasure to the Lord. That's the value system. Something is considered to be very valuable by the Lord if it brings him pleasure. And therefore we see so many examples of how the Lord exhaustively speaks about the glories of his devotees, who apparently by external vision live as renunciants. You know, he considered Raghunath Das's feast when he was taking the rice, the rejected rice, and he was that the cows wouldn't even eat. And he was taking that, he was breaking open the grains of rice and taking the inner husk, washing them off and eating them. Lord Chaitanya considered that to be the most opulent feast, so much so that he was indignant that he wasn't invited. Lord was so pleased by Raghunath Das's renunciation. In the Bhagavatam, it says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but who are fully satisfied in possessing only devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Indeed, that the Lord relishes the activities of such devotees. Those who are proud of possessing their wealth, being puffed up by their aristocracy, high education, bodily beauty, because of their pride, they'll generally deride the devotees of the Lord. They'll make fun of them. And even though such persons may offer the Lord worship, the Lord will never accept. Never accept. It can't bring him pleasure. The Lord can't feel pleasure by the offerings of somebody who doesn't know the real value of devotional service. And therefore such persons may come forward offering such worldly opulence. But that's not the criteria of pleasing the Lord. He's not pleased simply because some worldly opulence is offered to him. What he's pleased is when it's offered with a desire to please him. Can't purchase the Supreme Lord by your opulence. It's not what attracts him. It's the heart. You can't negotiate a deal with the Lord with your opulence. Give me more wealth. Give me high education, bodily beauty. Chanmaishvaya shuta shabirida mana madapuman. No, this Lord cannot be petitioned in this way. So the value of an offering is its ability to please the Lord. And because the Lord is bhavagrahi, he understands the essence of a person's attitude. And that's what makes it pleasing to the Lord. So when the Lord becomes so pleased because of that attitude, that the devotee, his happiness, his jubilation, his joy is coming from the fulfillment of his desire to offer something to the Lord, and when the Lord accepts it, that is his joy. That is his happiness. That's what gives a devotee pleasure. And when the Lord sees that the devotee has no other desire within his heart than to please him, he naturally wants to give something valuable in return. So as we explained before many times, although the Lord may offer, let me give you this, let me give you that, let me give you this, and the devotee again and again and again says, no, I don't want it, I don't want it. Competes with the Lord, then the Lord says, okay, even though you don't ask for it, I'm still going to give you something valuable. And the Lord gives his heart. Nothing greater of value when the Lord gives his heart to his devotee. For the devotee, he'll never reject the heart of the Lord. Because that's what he's always carrying within his heart. So that's what Krishna said to Maharaj, to Durvasa Muni. Devotee's in my heart and I'm always in the heart of my devotee. Devotee's always thinking about me and I'm not thinking about anyone but him. So devotee's always very eager to accept the Lord in his heart. He'll never reject that. He'll never say, no, Lord, stay out of my heart, please. I don't want you. So therefore the Lord gives himself, gives his heart. That is his. That's what satisfies a devotee. So this is understood to be real happiness. When a devotee, not the jubilation of the fulfillment of some material desire. Although one may get the fulfillment of some desire and he may feel tears of joy and happiness, and as we said, such tears are soothing. Like the moon, which is soothing. Or one may feel distress, and then one may feel hot tears. But this happiness and distress, as we know of this world, we have to transcend. First verse I ever learned was in a parking lot on book distribution, my first day on Sankirtan. Maturas Pashastu Konteya Sitoshna Sukudukada Agama Payinu Nichas Tang Sitikshasva Bharata. Right? It was tough. My first Bhagavad Gita verse, still there somehow. Everything else falls away as time passes, but somehow that verse sticks. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, and one has to learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Yes. So it's not just material happiness. If we really want to feel soothing, real soothing happiness, just like it's described here that Achimuni, he gave birth to Soma because he was feeling great happiness, the fulfillment of a desire, and therefore his tears of joy manifested, impregnated Anasuya. Soma took birth, was the moon god, and from Soma comes the soothing rays of the moon. But what could be more soothing than Nitai Padakamala, Koti Chandra Shitala? We talk about how the soothing rays of the moon manifest. But the real, what could be more soothing than thousands of moons is the shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. When one takes shelter of the lotus feet of Nityananda, then those lotus feet are more soothing than thousands and thousands and thousands of moons. And what does the moon do? As we know, the moon eradicates the heat of suffering, of pain. Soothing rays of the moon. Prabhupada speaks about after the scorching heat of the sunshine, one is very eager to take the soothing rays of the moon. Right? The cool moon night rays after the scorching heat of the day. Of course, we know that also the scorching heat can be put out by unlimited water. But if it doesn't come, if one waits the night time, then the soothing rays of the moon will eradicate the heat of the scorching sun. So in the same way that Lord Nityananda, whose appearance day is coming in just a few days, isn't it? Yes. 16th. His lotus feet are more soothing than thousands and thousands of moons. And if one takes shelter of Lord Nityananda, or the representative of Lord Nityananda, then all the unwanted desires within the heart can become completely eradicated, purified. And then one can feel genuine happiness, real happiness, brahma-sokyam. Real happiness which continues forever. Not the temporary happiness that may appear from the fulfillment of some temporary desire, but the permanent happiness which comes when the Lord fulfills the desires of his devotees by giving him the greatest benediction, which is the opportunity to be engaged in pure unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord, which satisfies all the desires of his devotee and makes him completely freed from automatically from all material suffering. So, this is a little bit about, I didn't really speak about Atri Muni, but somehow we felt that because Prabhupada spoke about tears, then we should try or aspire to have also to experience tears of happiness, that the devotee experiences joy upon receiving the greatest benediction, which is the opportunity to please the Lord with pure unalloyed devotional service. Therefore, we feel such joy, such happiness by the association of devotees who, by whose association can also cleanse away the unwanted desires within the heart. I remember, actually, first time I saw Srila Prabhupada. I can't remember if the tears were cold or hot, but they were definitely tears in my eyes. And if we take Prabhupada's statements to be perfect, as they always are, then they must have been cool. Because certainly I was feeling great happiness upon seeing the devotee who's by his mere presence and by his mere vision of him immediately makes one feel that he has hope for pleasing the Lord, and immediately makes one have confidence and faith that this discussion about pure devotional service is something that's achievable, attainable, and possible by the mercy of such Vaishnavas who've come and walk on this planet to purify this world by their presence. And even Krishna says, by the dust of the lotus feet of my pure devotee, I desire to purify this entire material world which is situated within me. And thus I always follow in the footsteps of these devotees, taking their dust. Krishna certifies that. Such great joy he also experiences, simply to see his devotees, his pure devotees. We should aspire for such joy. I think I'll end here. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions?
Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for your wonderful class. In the beginning, when you were mentioning, actually, I got a question in my mind, when you were mentioning about how a devotee feels happiness in hearing and chanting about Krishna, and you quoted that verse, Srinvatam Sakata Krishna. So that time I just got this question because many times we hear and chant and we actually feel happy, like, you know, in dancing, in kirtans and chanting. At the same time, we just don't have to hear only, we are not hearing only Krishna Katha because of the services we have, like in an institutional structure, if you are doing management, and we may sometimes have to hear some things which are not very palatable. And
that's okay. I'm all right. I just needed to. It was locked. Go ahead.
So I was talking about hearing about Krishna.
Yes.
Sometimes we are hearing about things which are not very palatable, about some, you know, scandals or controversies or some problems. Not that we are hunting for these news, but if you are in management, you get to hear them. And then that's not only negative kind of tough subject, but it also sucks our consciousness, and whatever taste we have for hearing chanting, that sometimes goes down. So I wanted to know how to deal with negativity, how to deal with things which are not very, you know, directly Krishna Katha, but regarding us, because of our service, we may have to hear certain things. So how do we deal with the negativity that we have in this world? While preaching and also while counseling people and, you know, those things also. How do we deal with this?
Well, you've made it an important criteria for hearing it in the first place. And that cannot be understated. That yes, there is a criteria for having to hear it. But unfortunately, sometimes devotees forget what the criteria is. And they take first opportunity to hear something which has no immediate connection with them, no importance to them, and neither are they the empowered persons to correct the situation, or the responsible persons to correct it. So first criteria is that one should not be interested in hearing them unless he has a responsibility for hearing them. So if we take that into consideration, then it limits. And I know that your question was specifically within the limited frame of reference that you spoke about for those who have to hear it. But I thought I should emphasize first that there are many who don't have to hear it, who shouldn't hear it, and by the mere fact they want to hear it is testimony that they're not qualified to hear it. Because nobody wants to hear these things. The devotee by nature is supposed to be a dosha darshi. Dosha darshi means that wherever he looks, he sees no fault. Of course, this Haridas Pandit, he's a dosha darshi. There's so many examples of dosha darshi given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're not looking for the fault. In fact, one of my favorite letters, Prabhupada's letters, a famous letter to Atreya Rishi, where he talks about utopia. And Prabhupada talks about how even in the spiritual world there are faults. And he gives the example that just like Krishna, one time he was so captivated by the beauty of Radharani that he began milking a bull. So Prabhupada gave that as an example of how even the spiritual world is false. And he said also that the gopis, they are also, if we analyze them, they were running into the forest in the dead of the night, and they weren't even dressed properly. They had their upper cloth on the bottom, and their bottom cloth on the upper part of their body. So he said, this was not right. So this, in the spiritual world, we even see such faults. So he said, but because there are faults, even here in this world, we should not be like the utopians who think that there should be no faults in this world. He said, no, there's even fault in the spiritual world. And gave those and other examples as well. And he compared the utopians to be like impersonalists. And impersonalists, they expect, you know, that everything should be just completely perfect. And whenever they see some fault, they want to have nothing to do with it. So that's impersonal tendency. He says, but the devotees, they understand that there will be fault, even in this world. But he's not looking for it. And he gives the well-known example that Prabhupada always gives, that the fly will always go to the source, while the bees will always go for the nectar. So he said that we should not be like the flies who are always eager to look for the sores. We should be like the bees who are always looking for the nectar, always looking for the good. So if our responsibility is to always look for the good, why should we be interested in hearing something which is negative? We shouldn't be interested. So we've divided. There's more to that letter, but let's get to the essence of your question. Yes, we sometimes have to hear things that may be negative, appear to be negative. But a devotee is one who's supposed to take that which is negative and make it positive. Prabhupada thinks about somewhere in the Bhagavatam in a commentary, he gives the example that whatever negative event happens in a devotee's life, I think he gave Haridas Thakur as an example, Jesus Christ as an example. He gave different Vaishnavas as examples who all had to confront negative events. But the devotee took that negative event, and turned it into something positive. So, those who have the responsibility to take the negative and turn it into something positive, they may have to hear such events that may appear to be negative. But they should take it with the understanding that let me try to make this situation and turn it into something that is favorable for the person who has been a victim of the negative, for the person who may have committed the negative. Let me try to give a Krishna conscious solution, not a diplomatic solution, a Krishna conscious solution. Because without Krishna consciousness, solutions, as we oftentimes find, are very temporary. And they create further friction. It's that verse in the Bhagavatam where Narada Muni is speaking to King Pachinibarhishad. And he says that persons who try to eradicate distress by engaging in another activity which is similarly motivated. He says it's just like a person who awakens from a bad dream with a bad hallucination. Doesn't really correct the problem. He says one has to awaken to Krishna consciousness. One has to fully awaken. And full awakening means awaken to Krishna consciousness as the solution to the problems of this world. So we should hear such topics and we should not be impulsive, but we should try to give a Krishna conscious solution to the problem which will benefit all parties concerned. Because if this conflict, which is oftentimes what we have to hear, conflict, isn't it? Yeah, it's the kind of stuff that sends my blood pressure up. It's the stuff we don't want to hear. Why have I been forced to hearing this for 25 years now? I know. I know what it's like to have to hear. But I also know what it's like when you actually very deliberately and tearfully pray to give a Krishna conscious solution to the problems. And then at least we've done our part. Others may not be able to accept, whether they accept or don't accept, it's their choice. But we've done our part. And then, even though the result may not be as we hoped, as we expected, although oftentimes if we do it with the proper motivation, Krishna has a way of stepping in. Tesham nitya bhayoktanam yoga kshema vahamyaham. Krishna has a way of stepping in that because you depended upon him and looked for a Krishna conscious solution, he'll step in and help resolve it in a way where everyone can benefit and parties can come, offer obeisances to each other, cry, I've committed an offense. It's possible. We have to have hope that such situations are possible. So if you hear it with that intent and act in that way, then less of a tendency to be negatively impacted. Of course, if it's in small doses. If it gets too much, then you also don't need to hear it. Take a break. Take a break. Because you have to be Krishna conscious. As we said, only Krishna consciousness can bring about a solution. So if you're bombarded by it, take a break. And come back to it. Revisit it at a later time. When you can deal with it in a Krishna conscious way. Alright, I didn't expect to take such a long time in answering that question, but I have to end here. Is that okay if I end?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada.